Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Coming up on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live, employment updates. There's some new numbers out. How's the employment looking in the United States? Depends who you ask, I guess. We've got the numbers for you. Also, the effort to defund Planned Parenthood threatens Obamacare repeal. Got some information about that. And also an interesting report on millennials. That and more, this edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online, kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. A lot of listeners around the world, we appreciate you joining us, and over the air at 101.3. I am Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau here today. The two hardy northerners surviving the winter wonderland that we are in.
Yes.
We got some snow. It looks nice out there. It's covered, the brown, dried winter vegetation, I guess, is covered with a white blanket of snow.
Yeah, about 3 inches of snow, and it's a little late, I suppose, maybe for what some people would have liked, but we get our annual dusting, and it'll probably be gone pretty soon.
Well, we were talking about it earlier. You know, the roads are so-so. They don't plow a lot of the smaller back roads, but it's going to be probably slippier later, because it gets packed down when people drive on it. It warms up just enough to melt some, and then it refreezes, and that's when it gets slippery. Snow I don't mind too much as long as it's not too deep, but once it gets to be icy underneath, that's where you have problems. The other thing is people want to drive down the middle of the road, and so you've got the two wheel ruts in the middle. That's A-okay until you've got traffic going both ways, and then you both look at each other, and you got to kind of slide over to the side and not get pulled into the ditch. So you said you saw a few trucks off the road.
Yeah, there are a few big dualies, the big two-wheel axle trucks in a ditch. It looked like they're trying to make a hard right turn at the bottom of a hill, and they slid into the ditch. So, I almost got stuck in the cul-de-sac by my house with my truck this morning.
Yeah, because it's rear-wheel drive, which is tough. It's almost as hard as saying rear-wheel drive.
That's right.
and that can be a little tougher in some of that snow. I didn't see too many problems. I don't have to go too far. As I was telling you before, the only thing was a guy in a four-wheeler was going way too fast and kind of having fun out there, but doing it on the road. And so he was sliding all over, and I was afraid he was going to hit me, but he didn't, thankfully. So be careful if you're driving around out there. I think there's snow really in a lot of the southern U.S. The storm system that we had is moving east, so snow is going to be in different areas. And so pretty much wherever you are, there's probably some snow, unless you're out in the more deserty areas. Probably not there, but a lot of the country has snow. And, of course, the further south you go, the less prepared people are for it. So they had the big special reports on the news last night on how to deal with the snow. And I didn't find them very helpful, but they tried their best. They had some, I think their tip was to put gas in your car. I think that's a good idea, snow or not.
Yeah, at all times.
You need fuel.
Have gas in your car.
Right. I think what they meant to say was that because it's going to be colder, you should gas up. I don't know what the snow would have to do with that, other than if you ran out of gas and you couldn't get to the gas station, but that was their advice. So
yeah, I guess when you warm up your car, if you don't have a lot of gas, you might run out in time. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, you'd have to be pretty low on the fumes there for that to happen. So anyway, we're enjoying a little bit of a winter weather. The kids love it. They're very excited, and it's very new. They don't have a lot of snow. We don't have a lot of snow here. So they were commenting as we drove today about the roofs, people's roofs. They were amazed that they were all white. And I'm just looking at them like, what? But if you're not used to seeing snow, it's a pretty big deal. There's new numbers out for the employment here in the United States. Some people say there's some good news. I guess 150,000 jobs were added. They were hoping for more, but those were added. However, there is a record 95,102,000 Americans not in the labor force, and that number has grown 18% since President Obama took office in 2009. So lots of people not working. That's almost a third of the country.
Yeah, that's huge amounts of people. And most of them are in the prime working age, too, from what I understand. They're not older people who can't retire, and they're not
babies,
teenagers. Yeah, like really young people who can't get paid. They're young middle-aged people who just can't find work, and that's pretty disturbing when almost a third of your country who can work can't even find any jobs.
Right, and in some, I mean, there are jobs out there. I don't know, obviously, all the situations here. It is good that there is a bit of a safety net as far as a welfare system if you need it for a while to get back on your feet. The difficulty comes when it becomes a lifestyle for somebody, you know, maybe say a single mother that has a bunch of children and doesn't work, something like that, to where they are perpetually just getting government aid. And I don't think it was designed for that originally. It's supposed to be a help in case you need it for a moment. But to live that way as a lifestyle, I think that's a problem. And in some cases, people can make more money doing that than they can working. So they might have their reasons for trying to stay unemployed, but it's still not a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think welfare, especially during the Great Depression when it was created, the system that we have today, was because people couldn't find work. And while they were looking for work, they could get welfare checks to pay the bills so they could still have their house. And they could still provide for their family, but while they're looking for work, it's
right.
meant to be a temporary buffer until they do find work. And especially in today, where we're not nearly as bad of a recession as in times past, to have that many people not working, not looking for work, or collecting welfare checks, I mean, that's extra money the taxpayer has to give to that instead of giving to a lot of other things we desperately need money for.
A while back, I was talking to a small business owner who employs a few people, and he commented that very often he runs into a situation where people come and apply for work, and they get hired, and they never show up. And the reason they don't show up and the reason they applied in the first place was because they just want to show that they're looking for work, and therefore they could get unemployment benefits. I think that's part of the process. For unemployment, you have to show that you're trying. So some are gaming the system by going and applying, and then they just never show up for work. But they can go back and say, well, I tried. And they actually got hired, and they just didn't come to work. That's not every case, I know, but there are some situations like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. And even I have a personal example of my family. My mother, I'm not going to say her age, of course, over the air.
36.
Good guess, though. But she's a little older, and she likes working part-time once in a while during the year. And she was working at this toy store during the holiday season, and just to pick up some hours, see if she liked it. And the people working with her are all very, very young millennials, people my age in their 20s, early 20s. And basically, after a period of probation, the managers would choose who they wanted to hire for the rest of the year, for the rest of the contract of, I think, 3 or 4 people. And my mom didn't really like the job because retail is just not her thing. She's used to be a librarian and a school teacher, so it's a little different work.
She'd get a job at a bookstore.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah. Anyway, at the end of the probation, they wanted to hire her because they say, like, yeah, you don't stand around and talk, wasting time. You actually work. You're friendly with customers. You look them in the eye when you talk to them. Those are things we want. And so that's just a good example where my mom, she didn't like the job, but she's tried her best at it. And she outperformed a lot younger people who probably could have done a lot better.
Well, that ties in to our next story in a really good way. This is from the Daily Mail, and this is about millennials. So millennials are people that were born 1982 and after. So you're a millennial.
Yes.
I'm not quite. I'm a little early. I was 4 years old when the millennials came along. I had seen a lot of the world. But anyway, that's where they break the line down for millennials. So if this is you, then I don't know. Something to think about. This isn't every millennial. This is a generalization. This is a write-up from the Daily Mail. They say, millennials are entitled, narcissistic, and lazy, but it's not their fault, they say. This expert claims every child wins a prize and social media has left Generation Y unable to deal with the real world. So he says they were brought up in this everybody wins and the social media age. And you were mentioning like the example with your mom and these other young people. You know, the social media has made a big impact where some people are so concerned with their social media. He even talks about this author in this report, how people that are really, really into social media, it has the same dopamine effect in the brain that, say, cigarettes or other drugs would. And people are addicted to it. And employers are saying, we need to do a little more work. we're not paying you to, like, update your social media account. We're paying you to do the job here. So that's one of the problems that they run into. The guy's name, he's a leadership consultant. His name is Simon Sinek. He's a cynic. He's being cynical. He has been told that millennials, people born after 1982, are entitled, narcissistic, self-interested, unfocused, and lazy. What do you think? You think that's true?
Yeah. You just held up a mirror. but I think it's a generalization, of course, but I think that's pretty close if you take it on average, based off of what people say, based off of just some of the unemployment numbers we were talking about, social media, but even my own experiences being around people my own age, especially in public school. And I think institutions like universities, public schools, and other places where most millennials go through in their lives a few times, I think that's a big part of it, is that especially at schools, they reward them for everything. You're not rigorously really tested, or you're not really criticized for underperforming or for bad behavior. Even there's not a whole lot of stringent repercussions for just outlandish behavior in public schools in most cases. So I think during the formative years, when someone's really young, especially in school around their peers, I think that's when a lot of bad habits form and this kind of attitude develops. There's more to it than that, but I think that's part of it anyway.
Yeah, and that's brought out here in this write-up from the Daily Mail. And I know that talking about being rewarded in school, I remember looking at some papers somebody had me look at one time. And, you know, just, hey, check this over, see what you think of a school paper or something. And it wasn't great. And it was okay, but the reason it caught my attention was that it was a person that had been a very good student in school, very good grades, and what I was reading didn't equate to the grade level. I was like, well, this is okay, but this would not be top of the class. This would be, okay, well, let's work on this, you know, from when I was in school. So that's what surprised me about it, because when somebody comes to you and they say, well, look at this, but you know that they're supposed to have this great high level of grades, that just didn't match up. So somewhere along the line, something broke there. The author's response, this guy from the Daily Mail that's writing here, to the millennial question on a show called Inside Quest. It's over there in the UK, I guess. I'm not familiar with it. Have you ever heard it?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No.
Inside Quest, it broke the internet, as they say, after he revealed why many young people may display the undesirable qualities listed by their bosses. So this has kind of come up because people that have hired the millennials are having a difficult time with them. He explained millennials grew up in an environment where every child wins a prize, only to find the real world after school is much different. Leadership consultant Simon Sinek has been told that millennials are entitled, narcissistic, self-interested, unfocused, and lazy. The author's response to that is what got everybody's attention. He says these young people were thrust into the real world, and in an instant, they find out that they're not special. Their mums can't get them a promotion. And by the way, you can't just have it because you want it. And he brings out how in school some of these young people got into honors classes not because they earned it, but because their parents complained. They're special. They should be in honors classes. It used to be that you had to earn that opportunity. This 43-year-old Englishman said he researched millennials after constantly being asked by business leaders for help dealing with them at work. So I just think that's really interesting. You know, hey, look, yes, we're all specialist people, of course, but not everybody's elite at everything. And I think that's the attitude. It's hard to work with somebody that thinks they're elite. Now, if they are genuinely elite, I guess you have to deal with it. But there aren't too many of those. And so, but if everybody thinks they are, they're hard to work with.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it is something hard to ingest and digest, criticism like that. But I think it's warranted. And it's not that people are, and they have proof and they're expressing their frustration at many years of seeing these patterns repeat themselves. And I think it is part of it too, I think, is a lot of our parents, I know my parents, they struggled a lot when they were younger to have the things. So when I was born, I had lived in this world where we were comfortable. I had everything I needed. We didn't really struggle too much, but you have a sense that, oh, everything's going to be okay because I have all these things. When a lot of older people, they did struggle more, establishing families in certain places. We're in a kind of at the outer extreme of the migration into the United States, where there hasn't been a war in a long time, so a world war. So people haven't really had to move over here and start something new. So a lot of the people here have been here for a while. And so I think the millennials, people like me, grew up in a pretty prosperous environment, either in just a family situation or just in general. And I think, as many historians and philosophers say, if you grow up in an environment of decadence, it's hard not to have your own character decay because of everything that's around you.
Well, and there's a couple of other issues. Maybe one big issue to think about, and that is, isn't this just the fruit that's come from some of the parenting ideology that came out of, say, the 60s and that time period? Can't discipline anybody. Don't be critical of anybody. You know, you got to build them up, self-esteem, all of that. Those are good things in measure, but if you can't discipline, and if you can't ever tell anybody, like, well, you did your best, but you didn't get a trophy because you came in fifth. If you'd like a trophy, work harder at it. I don't know, but good job. I mean, that there's nothing wrong with that, but not everybody wins. Not everybody's at the top. And, you don't create a generation of just really great qualities. You create a generation where everybody thinks they're the best. We'll try to get a room full of people together that they all think they're the best and see how well that goes.
Yeah.
It's not going to go very well because you can't all be the best. So I think you really do have to look back to just the parenting and the breakdown of the families, all those things, and the schooling. It all ties together. This is the result. It is a generation, according to people that are employing these people. And it's a generalization, of course. But the people that the employers are saying, we don't know how to deal with these people because they all think they're special. They all think they should get whatever they want whenever they want it. And they shouldn't have to put forth the effort. So it came from somewhere, and I think it starts with that parenting ideology.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue is family, of course, and that's the building block of society, and schooling and their interactions outside the family do impact anyone, of course. But if parents aren't instilling some kind of virtues in children through example or through discipline, then they're not going to have any, unless they learn the hard way later on. I think that's what a lot of us are facing right now.
Yeah,
is you're going to learn one way or the other. And it's better to learn from your parents when you're young by example and by teaching them rather than by your own experience.
I think the biggest thing, say when I started working jobs in high school and had some internships and a few other things, we had for a class, I had an internship for a class in school. And at the end of towards the end of the semester, we had to write, or talk about what was the biggest thing we had learned. What's the biggest thing you learned about the business world? And my answer was, you have to get along with people. That was the biggest thing I saw. You have to just get along, a lot of different personalities, a lot of different things going on. You have to get along. And that's, I think, the most important thing to any job, really. I mean, you have to be competent, but you have to get along as well. And if you walk in there thinking you're special and you can't get along with people, it's just not going to work very well. Nobody likes to work with that, you know. And so I think that's a skill that maybe has been lost. The just trying to get along and find your place and, you know, and work for something. Like, you're not going to get it immediately. You know, you don't graduate from college or get your first job or whatever and walk in and be like, you know, where's the deed to my house and my car? And, you know, maybe if you're going to a really, really big job, you got to work for things. It takes time. And I think sometimes that's lost maybe on some that if you want to have what, say, your parents had, you got to work for a while for it. You don't get it right away in most cases.
Yeah. And I think that ties in with social media is that a lot of people want to show off how well they're doing. And usually if you're struggling starting off your new life as a young person, you don't have a whole lot to show off.
Right.
In terms of a social media kind of persona that some people get into. So there is, and it's materialism at its core, but that does motivate a lot of people to seek things that are beyond their means and get into a lot of problems that way. So it is just a really destructive cycle of behavior that we're seeing play out. And it has, but it's not just happening right now. It's been, as we've been talking about, decades in the making.
Yeah. And a lot of times it really comes down to your performance, even for the guys at the top. This next headline talks about that. Apple CEO Tim Cook got a pay cut. Performance, he didn't do as well. He's still okay. He's still making some good money. According to a regulatory filing on Friday, Apple said its annual sales of $215.6 billion were 3.7% below its target of $223.6 billion. It's tough to keep making more because they've been so successful. Its operating income of $60 billion was 0.5% short of the $60.3 billion target. As a result, company executives got 89.5% of their targeted annual cash incentive. So, you know, what they get paid is tied to how well the company does. In 2015, the executives got 100%. In all, Mr. Cook received $8.75 million in total compensation this year, down from $10.28 million in 2015. That would be kind of lame. I mean, if you were planning on that 10.28 or more, still, that's a lot of money, but you know, $2 million you're not getting. So that's no good. But again, it's tied to performance. All other executives also received lower pay at Apple. Apple last year faced declining revenue as it grappled with the first prolonged slump in iPhone sales. They've been making their money on the iPhones. And now those sales are dropping a bit. So they've got to, I don't know, they've got to do something. I mean, they're still making a lot of money, but it's not going up. It's going down now.
Yeah, I think Apple's going to be an interesting case because other tech companies like Google, they have a lot of products which are pretty timeless, like internet search engines and that kind of work, which is something that will have a lot more longevity. When you're talking about an iPhone, someone can buy and they last a long time and people don't have a lot of money to spend anymore. It's going to be hard when you've saturated the market for many, many years with your technology. And the new iPhones coming out don't offer a whole lot more than the last one, but they're twice as much. So it is going to be interesting the direction they take. If they strike out some new technology, if they try some new products, or if they keep grinding away at the strategy, because I think they are going to be challenged with oversaturating the market and then trying to find the next thing they can sell people.
Well, and I think it highlights one major, major issue that is important in all walks of life, you know, whether it's history or, you know, of the world, say with governments or if it's business. You need the right guy at the top. I don't know much about Tim Cook. I don't think he's Steve Jobs, though.
Right.
You need that guy. And they're still living off of the legacy of Steve Jobs and what he did. But I think it just highlights that when the leader is not there anymore, things tend to kind of decline. And he was such a powerful presence and an innovator. Maybe they can find the next one. You know, maybe it is, maybe Tim Cook can do it. I don't know, but he didn't do it this last year. And it's a tough legacy to live up to. You know, it'd be like being a very good basketball player in Chicago. And they're like, yeah, but you're not Michael Jordan. Well, yeah, but still pretty good though, right? So he's probably, I mean, Tim Cook's probably very good, but I don't think he's Steve Jobs, at least based upon performance. And just there's a little bit of the shines come off of Apple. You know, it used to be like, boy, everything they touched was gold. And the shines come off a little bit. They've had some weird commercials that haven't worked for me. The Frankenstein guy coming down and singing songs and stuff like that. They used to have commercials to where you'd watch it, or I would watch it and say, oh, I could really use that. Like, that looks neat. Or I want it. Maybe yeah. That would be more appropriate. And now I see some of them and I'm like, I don't know. It isn't the same to me. And I think it has everything to do with Steve Jobs not being there.
Yeah, I have read a few articles this year where they do criticize him.
Tim Cook, yeah.
Yeah, because he's trying to be Steve Jobs, but he's not Steve Jobs. And when they present their new technology at these different events and his leadership style and some decisions that have cost Apple money, but whether it's unforced errors with sloppy release dates, bad iOS software updates, all those types of things that people just get tired of and they move on sometimes. But yeah, I think he's going to be challenged a lot this next year because you kind of have to put your own personal stamp on the world. And especially when you're the CEO of, I think, the most valuable company in the history of mankind. I think that's Apple achieved that this past year. So what are you going to do? And everyone, you're the one guiding this huge ship. And what are you going to do? How are you going to lead it to success? And you just eventually the persona of Steve Jobs will run out. So he does need to find his own niche and his own plan for success.
Yeah, I mean, Apple release information used to be a pretty hot ticket. You know, the oohs and ahs from the audience as the new product where you're like, wow, that is awesome. And I don't know that that's the same anymore. I do have a headline, though, that people want to take this, journalists, for the day that Tim Cook gets fired, if he does. One too many cook in the kitchen? ? That's a freebie.
Yeah.
You can use that if you want to. Speaking of journalism, occasionally we like to do a little segment called Today in Bad High School Journalism. And here's one from the Washington Post. I know they're not high school journalists, but it kind of comes across that way, hence the name of the segment. Washington Post goofs puts male symbol on cover about anti-Trump women's march. So they have this paper called The Express, I believe, and it's like a freebie they give away every day.
Right.
I wasn't aware of it until this. It's the Washington Post Express. And so they had this fancy cover they made with this graphic, and they were going to highlight this like anti-Trump march that women were going to do. But they put a male symbol on the front cover. It was all these people, but it was the male symbol instead of the female. They didn't know the difference between the two symbols. They say, you thought your Thursday wasn't going well. Spare a thought for the design team at the Washington Post Express, the paper's free daily edition, who managed to make front page gaffe for the ages. And then, of course, says the Express cover story was on the Women's March on Washington, an anti-Trump protest planned for the day after Inauguration Day. The headline was The Modest Start of a Massive March, and the glitzy cover featured an image of a gender symbol made up of marchers. Unfortunately, it was the wrong gender symbol. So some of the comments and tweets about this, somebody tweeted, they're clueless about a universal 265-year-old symbol, but they're qualified to police fake news for you? A comment here, what's all the fuss? There is no mistake there. It's transgender. Fair enough. Somebody else said, even with the free daily edition, it's still not worth the price. And another person said, it makes an acceptable fire starter this time of year. That's just the design team at the Washington Post Express. It's easy to make mistakes. You know, it does happen. I don't want to be too hard on them, but it is just kind of funny because they are so bold in throwing out their big ideas about society and how things should be, and then they goof. So I think it's worth laughing a little bit.
Yeah, when you put your neck out there with when you criticize others, when it comes back on you, it's usually pretty rough. And especially something like this, where you have a one of the biggest newspapers in the United States, a very experienced design team, very experienced chief editor-in-chief. But yet this gets through every single safety net they have in the entire process that they use for that newspaper, and it gets it printed and out there.
You know, to be on the safe side, they should have used that symbol that Prince used for his name.
Right.
Yeah, no one really knew what it was or how to pronounce it. That way we could all be like, well, I'm not sure what that is, but...
Must be right, because no one knows what it means.
Nobody knows what it means. The unpronounceable symbol. Bizarre. So, of course, this next one happened. Are you... familiar with the, I think it's, I don't know if it's a dance, or it's a gesture, at least, dabbing.
Oh, yes.
You put your arm up and kind of dip your head down there.
Yeah.
Made popular by NFL quarterback Cam Newton. This headline says, no inaugural dabbing. Utah Lieutenant Governor's 17-year-old son gets a warning after a Paul Ryan dab attack. The son of Kansas... Republican Roger Marshall found that out the hard way when the 17-year-old was grounded for attempting the dabbing dance move during a photo op with the House Speaker Paul Ryan on Tuesday following the U.S. House of Representatives swearing-in ceremony at the Capitol. What a goof. I'd be so mad if that happened. My kid did that. It says, while Ryan may still be confused by the waning or possibly resurgent internet craze, I think it's waning, at least one parent in politics is wise to the trend and has warned her teenage son that there will be absolutely no dabbing on Inauguration Day. Utah Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox tweeted Wednesday, prior to the inauguration of Governor Gary Herbert, that his wife warned their 17-year-old son, if you dab during the inauguration, I will kill you. That sounds like a threat, but I guess if your mom says that, it's not.
I think it's, and each family, that usually means something.
Something different.
Something different.
Not exactly what it sounds like. Like Cox's wife, Ryan also seems unamused by political dabbing, which according to GQ is very much over. Well, if GQ says it's over, then you know it's over. Especially after the this incident, I guess. A befuddled Ryan. So Paul Ryan's up there, and they're taking this picture, and the 17-year-old starts doing this dab move. A befuddled Ryan shot down Tuesday's dab attack by asking Marshall's son, do you want to put your hand down? And then he asked him, are you going to sneeze? He didn't know what he was doing, or he played it off. The teen giggled at the time, but it was his father who got the last laugh when he tweeted, just so you know, he's grounded. So his son was grounded. I guess that's the thing now. If your parent gets into political office, you make a mockery during the photo op.
Yeah, I saw the video of it. Of the Kansas Mr. Marshall when he was inaugurated, and yeah, just he and the son, he's right in between his dad and Paul Ryan. He's right in the middle of it, and he just starts doing this move, and a bunch of comments on the video said like that's what we did last year. Like, we're not doing that anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's
The dance has moved on.
Yeah, it's just funny how. I guess kids want their moment of, or 5 minutes of fame, but it usually lands them in a lot more trouble.
Yeah, really, really bizarre situation. So, way to embarrass your folks there when they're getting sworn into a high office. The Kia David program's coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. New program this weekend, God's Watchmen. The prophet Ezekiel described two end-time watchmen who would have a powerful impact on the world. One was chosen by the people, the other chosen by God. That's a new program, and it'll be coming up here in a bit on KPCG. And also, you can watch it online at thetrumpet.com. And, of course, it'll be on television in the United States and Canada this weekend, too. So you can check that out. If you're snowed in, might as well go ahead and check that out, even if you're not. But you might be snowed in because of some of the snow heading through the different places in this in the country. Trumpet Daily Radio Show also coming up with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England, going through some of the news headlines, talks about that Facebook attack, I guess, that we talked about a little bit the other day. More information about that, some other headlines, and then some emails as well. And so great program today. If you missed any this week, you can get those at kpcg.fm. Abraham, are you a fan of popcorn? You enjoy popcorn?
Yes, on occasion.
Yeah, I do too. Is popcorn healthy? That's the question. They say whether popcorn is healthy depends how you eat it. I guess you should eat it with your mouth. They say in its purest form, that is, plain air-popped kernels, it's a healthy, whole-grain, antioxidant-rich snack food that comes at a pretty low calorie cost for those who like to nibble a little bit. A 3-cup serving of air-popped popcorn has only 93 calories, 1 gram of fat, and close to 4 grams of fiber. But if you go for the movie theater popcorn, now it's a different ball game. It's topped in coconut oil before salt and a buttery topping are added. Buttery topping in quotes. That's not, we don't know what it is, but it is buttery in nature. A buttery topping are added. That's a distant cousin to its more clean living relative. According to a report from the Center for Science in the Public Interest, a medium bucket of popcorn holds 20 cups. Contains 1,200 calories, 980 milligrams of sodium, and 60 grams of saturated fat, or about 3 days' worth. So that's going to be a long movie.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings marathon or something.
Yeah, if you're going for Lord of the Rings, get the bucket of popcorn. Even if you ate only 3 cups, probably unlikely, they say, which is true, you would still consume about half a day's worth of saturated fat. So the movie theater stuff is pretty bad. I think we all knew that, but interesting to look at the numbers.
Yeah, it's... growing up, we'd always make our own popcorn at home and not take it to the movie theater, but if we were staying home
right.
that night. But at the movie theater, yeah, you see it made in this huge machine that's constantly turning and this syrupy yellow liquid they pour over it, and it tastes good. And it's addictive.
You know what it does, though? It does to you is it makes your mouth feel weird. You ever notice that after you eat it, your mouth kind of almost... sort of swells up inside.
Yes.
Something strange happens.
Yeah.
I don't think that's supposed to happen. I think it's a warning. It's your body's early warning system.
Yeah.
We don't like what you're doing here. But your brain says, I want more of this. It's a battle between the brain and the mouth. The worst mistake I ever made with movie theater popcorn was I went to a theater I had not been to before. We did order popcorn. And the lady behind the counter, she says, do you want butter on that? And I thought, well, sure I do. You know. What she meant was, do you want more butter on it? There was plenty on there already, and then she dumped more on it. And it's not really butter. It's that whatever that buttery type sauce is.
Yeah.
It was quite the experience. So, but it confused me. I thought, well, yeah, I want butter on it, but she just meant more.
Yeah, you're probably still living off the saturated fat intake to this day.
Well, take a look at me. Of course I am. you have a story here, Abraham, from CNN.com. Of course, in the news, a big deal is Obamacare, whether it will be repealed, what's going to happen there. A lot of layers to it. Effort to defund Planned Parenthood threatens Obamacare repeal. Planned Parenthood's in the mix a little bit. What are the details here?
Yeah, so this is really interesting because this is one of the biggest battlegrounds of the Republicans and Democrats that we'll see in a legislative way. Especially with the Trump impending administration. So Planned Parenthood is part of Obamacare. The funding is all tied into the Affordable Care Act, how much they get from the federal government. And so in order to repeal Obamacare, you do take away the funding for many different clinics across the country, including all the Planned Parenthood ones. And so... this bill, Paul Ryan introduced, that they'll be voting on pretty soon, to repeal Obamacare, includes the clause that they will strip all funding for Planned Parenthood with it. So that would effectively force Planned Parenthood to either be privately funded or disappear. I'm not sure how it would manifest itself, but that's what's on the agenda right now.
Well, I'm sure there'll be an outcry, from some sectors about that. Personally, I'd love to see it disappear because it's not, it's the title's a lie. It's not Planned Parenthood. Nothing to do with parenthood.
It's prevented parenthood.
It's killing. It's murder. And now people have their opinions on that, but, well, sometimes you just don't need to beat around the bush about stuff like that. It is what it is. that's what it is.
Yeah.
And the fact they call it Planned Parenthood is a mockery of the term parenthood. So, but there will be an outcry, I'm sure. People, I don't know what the numbers would be. Like, I don't know how many people are actually upset with it, but loud voices will certainly chime in.
Yeah. In fact, it's already reaching a lot of opposition, even within the Republican Party. So, in order to get this passed in the Senate, the Republicans need 50, at least 50 of their members. And there are 52 Republican senators, so that shouldn't be a problem. But it's ran into a complication. Two Republican senators, Suzanne Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, are both pro-choice. So they'd rather have the Planned Parenthood be funded. And then Rand Paul of Kentucky.
Lots of Pauls here, yeah.
Yes, yeah. He said he doesn't want to repeal Obamacare yet. It's too early, and he doesn't like what would come after it yet. So it possibly might not even get enough votes in the Senate. But the biggest block is this provision on Planned Parenthood. If that was taken out, it probably would be passed right away. And it has reached a lot of outcry from lobbyists, pro-choice lobbyists, even a Democratic senator. This is what Nancy Pelosi said. She's a House Minority Leader. This is Nancy Pelosi. So I just would like to speak individually to women across America. This is about respect for you, for your judgment about your personal decisions in terms of your reproductive needs, the size and timing of your family, or the rest, not to be determined by insurance company or by the Republican ideological right-wing caucus in the House of Representatives. So this is a very important occasion where we are pointing out very specifically what repeal of the Affordable Care Act will mean to women. So that's Nancy Pelosi's statement. But when you look into a little deeper, all her high-minded rhetoric kind of rings hollow, because what exactly is Planned Parenthood in the first place, like you mentioned?
Right. Well, there is, I don't think we need the biology lesson, but there are ways to not have kids.
Yeah.
People could maybe think about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the rhetoric that comes out, as you're mentioning here, is they always say, well, you know, you don't have a right to tell me what to do with my body, et cetera, et cetera. Well, but why do we have to pay for, like, some of these things? If it's your business, then it's your business all the way. You pay for it.
Yeah.
If you want to go through with all that stuff, it is your business. But it's made the public's business because it has to be funded by the public, and many people don't agree with it. If it's your business, then keep it your business. Why not?
Yeah. Why not make it privately funded? This brings up an interesting, question here. So with all that going on, there is a provision in the Constitution, it is called the Hyde Amendment, named after the person who created it. Basically that no federal money is allowed to go to programs that include abortion services unless they are needed to preserve the life of the mother or are caused by rape. So those are the two provisions
right, for
allowing that. I also did some research on what are the numbers. So that's the legal footing for having Planned Parenthood being funded by the federal government. So what do the numbers say about what's going on here?
Right, and that's another big argument that will come up when, if people say they don't agree with abortion, they'll say, oh, but what about cases of rape? What about life on the line type of thing? Well, if you look, I'm sure you'll bring out here, because I've seen the numbers too, there's not very many of those cases. Most of them are not that.
Yeah. So just to give some background here, the most recent numbers we have are from 2012. And all these numbers are with abortions, they're reported voluntarily. So they're not exactly accurate. They're only if the mother would like to be counted in these different statistics. So they're not exactly 100%, but they do give us, I think, a pretty good representation of what's going on. In 2012, there were about 700,000 abortions in the United States. There were about 4 million babies born in the U.S. in 2014, so it's around the same time period here. In the United States, about half of all pregnancies are unintended. Of all unintended pregnancies, 4 in 10 are aborted. So half pregnancies are unintended. They're not planned. 4 in 10 are aborted. So that's a pretty high number. 21% of all pregnancies in the U.S. end in abortion. So about 1 in 5. And that doesn't include miscarriages.
Right.
So that's just some basic numbers. But what about, like it says in the Hyde Amendment, what about those caused by rape or these other terrible incidents? And this is really hard to break down to numbers because both sides claim different numbers. But I ran the numbers for every single statistic that's out there. So, and again, I use 2012 because that's the last ones we have. So there are 5 sets of numbers that different groups use. And here are the 5 numbers based off of statistical analysis for 2012. Around 3,200, and these are pregnancies caused by rape. This, yep. These aren't even abortions. These are just pregnancies where the abortions could come from. 3,200 from the National Anti-Sex Violence Organization. About 7,200 from federal data, so that's from the federal government. About 20,900 from the FBI. 32,000 based off of a 1990 study by some doctors and specialists. And about 50,000 based off of some private research by some pro-abortion lobbyists. So a huge wide variety of numbers, 3,200 to 50,000. And here are the percentages. So let's assume every single one of those pregnancies were aborted. Here's the percentage out of that 700,000 abortions of 2012 that actually were caused from rape. So it could be as low as 0.46% or as high as 7.2%. That's it. So when you talk about the millions and millions of dollars going to Planned Parenthood from the federal government that the taxpayer foots each year, only about 7% of all abortions, and not even that, it's probably much, much less. That's the highest estimate possible. Only 7% of all abortions in the U.S. are caused by rape. The other 93% and more are caused by, for other reasons, women not wanting to have a family or different, all those different situations. So just these very basic numbers, which are out there for people to find, it undercuts their whole premise for even having it in the first place.
Yeah. And they should, I mean, if they believe strongly in those numbers, the people that are pro-abortion, they should put them out there as their platform. But, you know, and whenever you're dealing with mankind, there are so many problems. There are so many sins. And so, you know, there's always, well, what do you do in this instance? Well, I mean, you want the real solution? Just stop all of the sins.
Yeah.
I mean, stop rape. Now I know that you can't wave a wand and have that happen, but that is the solution. The solution isn't trying to fix it down the road, but really bad when those things happen. But again, these things just compound the problems in a lot of ways. And then, of course, most of the people that are involved in the using Planned Parenthood services are not in that situation. They don't know all the situations, you know, and those people obviously, you know, they have to make decisions and live with it, and you know, you don't want to be critical of that. But when you look at it on the whole, we are a society that is destroying our next generation, a large percentage of them. And I don't know how people can look at that and think that's okay.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking numbers. And whether you morally agree with it or not, if you just look at the state of which and just the massive amounts of everything going on, it just shows just how degenerative we're becoming and just how the systems we've put in place, like Planned Parenthood, aren't going to solve all the other problems caused by a family breakdown, children that don't have only have one parent or no parents. There's just so many problems that are, and this is just one, I think, terrible side effect of the many sins in this country. I think this shows there's a lot more or America's in a lot more trouble than just with Donald Trump being president. as this shows, there's a lot more, just with the common people, that we need to realize that it's contributing to America's downfall.
Right. The organization Planned Parenthood only exists because of what people are doing.
Yeah.
In some cases. So interesting to see what will happen. That's always a big back and forth fight that goes on there when it comes to Planned Parenthood and, of course, Obamacare and how that all ties together. We'll end on a better note here, because everybody wants to make a lot of money, right?
Yes.
Be a millionaire. Five steps, they say. These are from self-made millionaires. Take it for what it's worth. See if it works. They say five ways that you should, five things you can do if you want to increase your net worth, your income. Number one, they say you should invest in you. Invest in you. Successful people invest time, energy, and money into improving themselves. And this one guy says, I invested in sales training when I was 25. That made my income producing ability skyrocket. So probably some good advice. Get some education. Figure out what you want to do and go after it. Number two, they say find a job in the right vehicle. No, they don't mean be an Uber driver necessarily. They're just saying don't worry so much about how much it pays up front. Is it? Can you advance? If you can advance in it, if it's a good opportunity, do it and get into that right vehicle. And again, that kind of flies a little bit in the face of some of the, like the millennial stuff we were talking about earlier. You don't usually come in and get the big job right away, but if you get into the right company, then you can grow.
Yeah, and you don't want to be a square peg in a round hole. You need to find what you're good at and what you like, or else it's going to be very difficult to sustain any kind of longevity there.
And yeah, very frustrating. They say get great at what you do. I'm trying. Why are they always on me? They say commit to being great, not just average. Well, you know, do your best, I guess. I don't know. I can't just wake up and be like, I'm going to be great this day. They say any industry can be a painful profession for average and bottom performers, but massively rewarding for those that are great at what they do. So it's a good goal. I mean, you have to set the goal up there to be the best that you can be, and you'll do better, obviously. Number four, they say get multiple connected income streams flowing. They talk about that a lot. There's a lot of different books that talk about that. The more money you've got coming in, the better. And they say if you can get connected income streams. In other words, if you're working in IT, don't open a donut shop.
Right.
They're two different worlds. They say you try to find things that are related to what you're already doing, what your skill set is, and see if you can kind of improve that and improve your cash flow. And then number five, they say try to save up $100,000. Oh, okay. get on that. And then invest the rest. So if you can do those things, you might end up being wealthy. They said $100,000. I thought that was rich. But I guess that's only the beginning.
Yeah,
you want to be a millionaire.
Just a nest egg of greater things, I suppose.
Yeah, my son had a real eye-opening moment yesterday. He has a very, very small little bank account. And he got the statement in the mail. And I showed him that he made a few cents in interest. And he's like, he's like, well, so what happened? I'm like, well, you got more. Like, they gave you more. And I said, the more money you have, the more interest you would get. If you had millions of dollars, you'd get a lot of interest, you know. So he said, oh, I'm going to start putting more money in the bank. I said, well, good for you. Let's see if it works. But, yeah, it's always a little discouraging when you get 3 cents of interest.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
only 3 cents.
Yeah, and it's made, like, well, what's the whole point of having interest in the first place if you're just shelling out 3 cents a month?
Got to put a little more in the account.
Yeah.
And then, of course, obviously, there are some investment accounts and things out there. But it's always fascinating to see what people say. There are a lot of different ideas about it. And some people are really, really do have a knack for making gold wherever they go. And others don't do quite as well with that. But there are some interesting principles there. I think some of them are pretty good, you know, especially about just working on your education, doing the best that you can, and finding the right job. Those are all important things.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can get into something early on in your life and then just work there, because the longer you're at a place, the better the cash and better environment, better well-being for your mind, too. It usually works out all the way around.
Yep. So those are, you know, we just like to give you some points about how to become rich.
Yeah.
So follow those five simple steps. We'll talk to you on Monday, see how much money you made. That'll do it for us here on Trumpet Radio Live today. And for this week, Have a great weekend. And if it's snowy, enjoy the snow wherever you are. We'll see you back here on Monday, 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.